This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed. Here we are on News Talk Radio 710 WOR, Friday, John Gambling Show, 8 after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is in Studio 4. Good morning.
Good morning. It's usually, you know, where bright-eyed, bushy-tailed talk about fun things. This morning, not so fun.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. It's very sad. There's a firefighter, Paul Wahola, W-A-R-H-O-L-A, I think, from Engine 221, and he suffered a stroke on Wednesday.
In the line of duty?
Yeah, he's working at the Brooklyn Firehouse, and then this morning he died at Bellevue Hospital. He became ill during the response and then got back to the firehouse, and he started feeling worse and worse, so they rushed him to EMS, rushed him to Bellevue, and died this morning. And talked to a couple of guys, and they said this really was one of the bravest. The guy's 16 years on the job, wife, son, 15, and a daughter. And the daughter's 13, so they're old enough to really have known their father. And you got a prayers are obviously with him and the family, but it's just another example of, people put their lives on the line all the time to make this city safer, and sometimes they just don't come home.
We watched that this weekend, a week ago tomorrow, in that crash over the Hudson, the Marine Division with their divers. I mean, it doesn't get any more dangerous than that.
Well, you had everybody responding, fire, and fire had some divers. Most of the divers are police divers, and then they took over. It became very obvious almost instantly that this was not a rescue effort. This was a recovery effort. And the thing that's most important to do is to be safe in the recovery, because there's nothing you can do. And if it's a day later or a day earlier, it doesn't make any difference. You don't want to compound a tragedy. The chief medical examiner in his office, in dealing with the bodies and the families, really did a great job.
The fact that you had tourists, so people from other countries.
We had our community affairs unit worked with the families and the Coast Guard. And on the Jersey side, there was the Port Authority Police and the Hoboken Police and some state police from New Jersey and the National Transportation Safety Board, and everybody was there. Office of Emergency Management. It was the good news, I suppose, the good thing on Saturday, which I kept thinking about while I was standing on a pier, was how everybody was working together. Police and fire, have the most number of people there, but there are all these other agencies as well, and they train together, and they know each other, and they respect each other, share information, and have radios that communicate, and all of that kind of stuff. And, it gives you a good feeling that if they have to mount a rescue effort, or focus on prevention, which is what you'd really like to have them spend all their time on, that we're well served.
You are a proficient helicopter pilot, and I know that you've said that you're going to leave it to the FAA and NTSB to make obviously final decisions and recommendations. But you've flown that corridor a lot.
It is busy. The rules are from 1,100 feet down. 1,100 feet is roughly a 10-story building. From that altitude down, you are on your own. The pilot's responsibility is to see and avoid other aircraft. A lot of the pilots use a common frequency, which is published, to tell each other where they are. And I scrupulously am always...
I was going to ask you whether or not
you're
on that channel when you're below 1,100.
I tell them where I am, what altitude, where I'm going, which side of the river, and then look very carefully and have a radar kind of device. Isn't radar, but it's kind of device that generally tells you where other planes are, although depending on the way the other plane or helicopter is situated and its antenna may not be in line of sight, you don't always get it. But
every plane has one of those.
Do have to. There are rules for flying in this area. You have to have more equipment than if you are out in the Midwest.
I didn't know that.
This is an area where you have to have what's called a transponder that actively reports your altitude to, and a radar can see it. But it's not just bouncing a signal off. It triggers something, and the other's transmitted back and transmitted back with information called a mode C. Regardless, the bottom line is it's a ways to accommodate a lot of traffic going in and out, which is we've not had other crashes. I think the last one was back in the 80s, if I remember, a police helicopter in an airplane. But it's the pilot's responsibility to see and avoid. And this is a great tragedy, and we'll leave it to the FAA and the NTSB to investigate and see whether there are other appropriate restrictions required. They did change the rules on the East River after that pilot went up, although there was virtually no traffic other than professional pilots on the East River back then.
Now, somebody asked me about flying over Manhattan or over the city.
You're not allowed to, right? No, where you get a clear, you can get a clearance where they you're positively controlled. The radar operator, in this case, it would be from LaGuardia's tower or LaGuardia approach, and they monitor you 100% of the time, and they tell you about all the traffic, and you have to, before you can enter their airspace, you have to stay out. You may have to circle a million for hours or go the other ways, but you cannot go in without permission, and people, that's something people always obey. I think what happened here, you have a lot of pilots using the common frequency, and not all pilots entering the space monitor it or tell where they are. The pilots who fly every day here do. Those that come in for a brief period probably don't. But I don't know that. Maybe the guy did. You just both. I don't know.
All right. We will have to wait and see what the NTSB and FAA.
Yeah, it's
FAA
tragic regardless.
Yeah,
nine people are dead.
All right. Let's take a break here, Mr. Mayor. We're coming back. Here we go. We've got more with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock here. Terrible tragedy yesterday. Cabbie running over a poor little boy, 8-year-old, allegedly on a cell phone, which there already is laws against that, right?
You know, you can talk to the person next to you. I suppose you can talk hands-off, hands-free cell phone, but if you've got one hand on the cell phone, it's one less hand to drive a car. Car weighs thousands of pounds, whatever speed it is, even slowly. If it hits somebody, it's a bad mismatch.
It's a bad deal, right?
And, there's a law against talking on a cell phone. The police try to enforce it, but they can't look at every car all the time. It's one of these laws that fundamentally you depend on the common sense of the driver to, and you enforce it by occasionally catching somebody, and hopefully that teaches a lesson to the others, but the cops can't be in every car. And, I don't know whether he was talking, and I don't know whether it would have prevented the accident. What is true is a young kid is dead. It's very tragic.
It is indeed. You finally got officially your mayoral control back, signed, sealed, delivered?
Governor signed it. Senate passed it. Assembly had passed it earlier. We're back to where we were a while ago in trying to improve the school system. This was a distraction, I guess is the word I should have used, distraction that we didn't really need. Took a lot of time, effort, yelling and screaming. But we are back in terms of going forward. I wanted to thank the members that were appointed to the Board of Ed, my deputy mayor, Dennis Walcott, who was president of the Board of Ed. I don't have to call him El Presidente anymore, so he's upset about that, but he'll get over it.
He'll get over it, right? You'll make sure of that.
Yeah, in the meantime, we have a new panel for educational policy that will review the chancellor's proposed changes and the Department of Education's budget, as well as the school capital plan, and they've got responsibility to approve some contracts and labor agreements and proposals for closing failing schools. It is the last step, really, in reestablishing the school governments that has allowed our schools to make all these improvements over the last 7 years. It's really dramatic, and some people say, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. But they keep coming back to the tests being harder or easier. I don't know if they're harder or easier. The state swears that they've got lots of professionals who say that they're the same year in and year out. But what is true is all the kids in the state take the same test. So when we look at how well city kids are doing versus the rest of the state, which is we've closed that gap dramatically, That's a real, no matter whether the test is hard or easier, that's a fair comparison. When you look at how different ethnicities test, everybody takes the same test. The closing, we've cut the gap in half, and for decades nobody did anything. That's a fair comparison.
Is it time to toughen the tests up, though? That's a state issue.
Well, I would always, that's a totally separate thing, I would always keep raising the bar because people work up to a floor rather than down. You want the floor to be above you. You want to work up to the second floor, not down to the basement kind of thing. And the world is getting tougher. So people say, oh, you know, once they pass the test, why should they do better? That's not the objective here, where the objective is to give every one of our students as many advantages and tools to go out in the real world and to be successful. And what we did was there was some change in requirements in terms of who is on the board. We have to have a couple parents. So what we've come up with is there are four who had served previously on the educational panel for educational policy. Phil Berry, he's the president of a consulting firm and on CUNY's board. David Chang, he's the chancellor of the Polytechnic Institute. And Tino Hernandez, he's the president and chief executive officer of Samaritan Village, and he used to be the chairman of the New York City Housing Authority. And Richard, or Dick Menschel, formerly of a senior director of Goldman Sachs, that he started working at in 1959. I knew him from 1966 on. And he's president and director of the Chirina Endowment. And then we have four new members, Linda LaSalle Bryant. She's got a child in a middle school in Brooklyn. She is the executive director of Inwood House, which is really a nationally recognized innovator in teen pregnancy prevention and youth development and family support programs. So she really knows what she's doing. Joe Chan, who has a child in a public pre-K program in Brooklyn and a second in a Brooklyn public elementary school. And he was appointed as the first president of the Downtown Brooklyn Partnership. He worked for Deputy Mayor Doctoroff back when, and his focus has been on land use and some planning issues. And he taught public schools. So he's a teacher, was a teacher in the South Bronx as part of a Teach for America teacher. Tom Morales, who I was with yesterday, he is the head of the president of the College of Staten Island. Was with me yesterday when we had this announcement about community colleges, and he's the board of trustees of the New York University appointed him for the College of Staten Island. He's one of the few higher education administrators in the United States who's held senior administrative positions at three large public universities, California State University System, which is, I think, the biggest. The state of State University of New York and the City University of New York, and Gita Peng, who served for 5 years as working in City Hall as senior education policy advisor to Deputy Mayor Dennis Walcott. So he lives on this panel. If not him, it's somebody that really probably carried him all these years. Dennis, I'm sure, is listening, and he'll work me over about that.
I am sure. Let's talk about the community college effort that you announced yesterday that you want to expand here in the city of New York. It's already, there's 80,000, I think I read this morning, 80,000 students in that community college system.
Yeah, community colleges really are a step for a lot of people. You know, it's we did it as part of something where I was trying to lay out a campaign, what you do in a fourth term, which I think you have a responsibility to do. So let me talk about that another time, because otherwise it gets too close to
fair enough.
To the campaign.
All right, fair enough. We will pass that one by and wait for another time on that one. The MTA arbitration decision. I mean, it just makes no sense. We don't understand. I've discussed it here with my listeners. We don't understand why the government doesn't play by the same rules as the rest of us do in the economic environment that we have.
Well, this number one was done by supposedly independent arbitrators. The way this works is the union appoints an arbitrator, the management, in this case the MTA, appoints an arbitrator, and then there's the governor, I think, was the one that appointed. Not 100% sure of that. Generally, it comes from a group of arbitrators, but I think in this case, I vaguely remember the governor appointing John Zuccotti, who's a really great guy. Done a lot for the city.
Yeah, he's been around the block, too.
Runs Brookfield. Yeah, I mean, he knows a lot about the city. So I don't know what... In the end, it is always the guy in the middle that makes the decision, because you've got two parties that can't get together, and all you need is 2 out of 3 votes. I think most professionals would say the guy in the middle probably sides with the unions more than he does with management, but I think you got to go back in all fairness to them and look at the numbers and see whether it's true. Generally, they try to come up with something in the middle, in all fairness to them. Sometimes if the two parties can't agree at all, what they'll say to one guy is, I'm going to go and vote with the other one for everything he wants unless you come halfway. So you say, I'll come halfway, and then he goes to the other guy and says, now, this guy is a good guy. He's gone halfway. If you don't go halfway, I'll go back and vote for what he originally wanted for. And that's, you know, a good negotiating process, and they come together. So I think, in all fairness, these guys in the middle generally do a pretty good job. If both sides are complaining, you know they did a good job, okay? In this case, both sides aren't complaining.
No, only one side.
The real issue here is that you have an MTA budget that is 3 months old and all of a sudden has a 200, 300, 400, depending on whose numbers you believe, hole in it right away, before you even start. And the argument was, well, the city workers got this kind of raise. Number one, I don't know why the city workers and the MTA workers have to
same
thing.
That, I think, is the question of the population.
Totally, one's a state agency, one's the rest of the city. And they have different economics, different funding sources.
And nobody's getting raises in this environment outside.
Well, you know, it is true, it's a different world. If your contract comes due in a time when everybody's flush with cash, you'll do better than if it comes due to be renewed in a time that it's bad. Some of the unions are forward-thinking and say in good times, hey, I'd like to extend my contract. And, you know, there's some attractiveness to that from the management, whether it's in the private sector or the public sector, because at least you'll know what your expenses are. And maybe things are going to get even better, and you would have to do more down the road. And so everybody runs a risk and makes a decision. In this case, whether you have to ask John Zuccotti why he gave the decision. And if I'd been in his place, I might have done exactly the same thing. I don't think this is John Zuccotti's issue. I think it's the state. The MTA didn't assume that there was going to be big raises, and I don't think that the arbitrator should have given big raises. But I wasn't there, so...
But the MTA made the decision to go to arbitration. They walked away from the negotiations.
Never made any sense to me, and the guy that made that decision, the governor, and he parted ways, is a nice way to phrase it. So he's not around. It never made any sense to me to do that. And there is the rationale that because the city has something, the MTA has something. By that argument, you know, somebody in Tuscaloosa, Alabama got 100% raise, and therefore everybody deserves 100% raise.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, that logic doesn't work.
But the public has to stand up and say, we're not going to take it anymore because we don't have money for the capital projects. The MTA actually laid out a whole... This woman, Helena Williams, who runs it, and Dale Hummerdinger, they're temporary while we see what happens when the Senate hopefully approves the governor's choice to be the new...
Jay Walder.
Yeah. But in the meantime, they've got some great things. As a matter of fact, I did an event with them showing bus stops that tell you how long it is till the next bus, which people said, oh, well, it'll get you a chance to go in and coffee. I don't take the bus these days. I just take the subway. But I used to, you know, do you start walking?
Or do you wait?
Or do you wait?
Right.
That, to me, was the real key decision, you know. It's a long... Now, sometimes you're talking about going 10 miles. You can't walk, obviously. But if you're going 20 blocks, you could walk it. You got to make that... And at least you'll have the information to do it. But I think that... They have a capital plan and they don't have any money. And, you know, I don't know whether our old plan would have worked, but I do know it was turned down and they said they had a better idea. Okay, you got to have... And they said, well, in the last 3 months ago, well, we have enough money for a capital plan for a couple years. You can't make long-term commitments unless you know the money's going to be there. And, you know, I don't know what you do with something like the Second Avenue subway. It's been 20-plus years.
Yeah, and it starts, and then it stops, and starts, and then it stops.
And the other day, they said another 2 years, so just to lengthen the...
Yeah.
The good news is the 7-line extension is under budget and ahead of schedule.
All right. We're gonna stop.
Which the
right
MTA is doing the work. The city put up the money. MTA is doing it. They deserve the credit.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Sit tight here. It's 8:32 again. All right, Mike Biggs doing the call screening this morning, being tough. Got a couple of lines, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Economic numbers out yesterday, everything pretty soft, except for cash for clunkers.
Yeah, and the cash for clunkers thing will eventually...
peter out, it'll go away.
Yeah, and if you cash for clunkers, great, but you're still going to have to pay for the new car. I think, like all these things, it's a mixed bag. In New York City, you know, when I talk to people on the subways in the morning, there are people getting hurt. There are people who are worried, who haven't gotten hurt yet but are scared. Lose a house, lose a job. Your business, small business, in danger of closing. That's one side. The other side is when I talk to a lot of store owners, they'll tell you a few more customers coming in. Restaurateurs will tell you a little more business. The big stores say things have stopped going down, maybe even a touch better. A few more ads in some of the newspapers when I talk to the publishers. So, you know, not everybody gets hurt and not everybody gets helped. And what we've got to do is do everything we can to make the city more attractive for people to come here and stay here.
How's tourism? What's that running?
It's I looked at numbers yesterday. For most big cities, they're down double digits, meaning 10 to 20, someplace in the middle there, probably more 13-15%. New York City's only down a couple percent. That's the good news. The bad news is tourists aren't spending the amount of money when they're here. But we have something like 3,000 new hotel rooms this year than we did last year, more. And occupancy is actually pretty good. The room rates are down. So the owner of the hotel says, look, I've got to provide all the services, but I'm not getting the revenue. That is true, but at least people are still coming here where they've stopped going, and they have stopped going other places. So, you know, we've got to keep making this city more attractive to tourists. Giving them things to do that are exciting and making sure the city is safe and clean and hospitable. And
are you comfortable with the direction that Geithner and Bernanke are going? Nobody has an answer.
No, that's right. I mean, you know, they're the smart guys and they're there, and I'll let you know when people write. I mean, even when people write the history books about this period, there'll be lots of different opinions as to did things fix themselves or was it because of them, or did they make it worse? Take your pick. Any one of the three, you'll be able to get a PhD writing that thesis, and you'll be able to sell some books. You know, Tim is a very smart guy. He's working exceptionally hard. Larry Summers is there. You know, we talk about those two and Bernanke. There are lots of people who are working in the government trying to solve the problem. There are lots of people giving advice. Paul Volcker has got a committee, and Paul is as smart a guy as there is. You know, there is a great fear that all of the stimulus money will come back to haunt us in the context that we're spending money we don't have. There is also a legitimate argument to make that we were very close to a real meltdown. And back when Tim was the head of the Fed and Paulson Hank was the Secretary of the Treasury, there was a weekend when nobody was sure where the banking system would open on Monday, and that would have been a calamity for every man and woman in this country. And now we're trying to second-guess them, you know, and say, and there's a great story. I love the story. This guy is driving his car, and he's late for a meeting, and he can't find a parking place. And he says, oh, God, please, God, if you give me a parking place right now, I'll go to church every Sunday. I'll call my mother every day. I'll help the poor. I'll minister to the sick. And all of a sudden, a space appears. And he says, forget about it, God, I just found one. And that is, there's a little bit of this. We forget that, you know, I don't know if they did the right thing or the wrong thing, but we were in big trouble then. And the interesting thing is when you talk about the stimulus, most of the money has not been spent.
Yes, in fact, I see money the city has gotten has not been spent.
See, I mean, yeah, well, the city, we've got, you have to have shovel-ready projects, and we've got a bunch, and we're doing a good job at that, at least trying. The real impact of the stimulus so far, if it's had impact, is in ameliorating the crisis of confidence. Of lack of confidence. And that is as serious as real problems, because if people are worried, they don't spend. If they don't spend, then there's no jobs and whatever, and it sort of creates its own reality. Down the road, over the next year or so, as we spend the money, the question is, do you now have a deficit that you can't support? Is it to hurt the dollar? Do you, when things pick up, do you start to have an inflationary cycle? We're going from boom to bust to boom, which you can't, you know, and it's going to hurt everybody. I'm mildly optimistic, particularly on New York, but, you know, you can't walk away. We're working as hard as I can on all of these programs to train people and get them jobs and help small businesses that are up against it and give people advice if they're about to lose their home. I mean, hopefully they remember and call 311, because the city, you know, we're not going to give them a mortgage. We're not going to give everybody a loan, but you can do some things, and that's what the city can do. We are part of the state and part of the country, and I think long-term, you can't spend money you don't have. Presidents talked about that. The state governments throughout this country, there are a couple that are in great shape because they have a lot of oil, or something like Texas, I think, I was told, is doing pretty well. But then there are states like California where you've seen this enormous problems, and I think
they have a deficit of 35% of their budget.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what really happens with New York. All of a sudden, the governor the other day, you know, last week said we just discovered a $2.5 billion deficit they didn't know about a few months ago. The city is the one I really am familiar with. We are in okay shape for this fiscal year, which started July 1st, so we're a month and a half into it. Next year is going to be problematic, and we're got to work right now to make sure we watch every penny, reduce our spending to the extent we possibly can. At the same time, you can't walk away from those things that would push people out of the city or keep them from coming. So we're always saying we've got to do more to get tourists here. We've got to reduce taxes to keep people here so they pay their taxes. At the same time, all the stuff costs.
You need revenue.
That's, you know,
revenue enhancement.
You know, the municipal employees depend on the private sector. That's where their wages come from. The private sector is here because of the good job the municipal employees do. So their futures are as tied together as any two things could possibly be.
There is great fear on the economy, or in the economy, possibly getting us, because there's been so much money pumped into it with TARP and everything else, of inflation coming around the corner with too many dollars chasing too few services.
Well, someday there will be inflation, whether it's early or later.
Exactly. I mean, how impactful is that on the city, an inflationary period? Is that problematic or not so, but not so much of a worry?
The bad news with inflation is that it hurts. The good news, I suppose, is that if you borrowed money before it started, you pay it back with cheaper dollars. And inflation typically, not always, but typically comes when economic activity is growing. So, you know, it's...
There's no way to avoid it.
What's a good news, bad news thing? And people get whipsawed. Well, just tell me, is it good or bad? The answer is yes.
Okay.
Because there's a good part and a bad part. The, you know, when there is no inflation, it's easier to borrow money at lower interest rates. And if you're an exporter, your cost of goods sold is probably less. Remember, New York City benefits from a cheaper dollar because tourists come here and spend money here, and companies that are here that export can compete better around the world. On the other hand, from a cheaper dollar, it means if we wanted to buy something overseas, it's going to cost us a lot more in real terms. So the answer, once again, yes.
Yes. So either way you go. All right, we're going to go to the phones, 800-321-0710. It's 7 now before 9 o'clock, 7 before 9, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and you. We've got your number, you've got ours, and we're going to go right to the phones. Going to start with line number 5. That's Valerie. Hello, Valerie. You've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi. Thank you. Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
We live on Long Island and get into the city quite frequently to enjoy all the events and things that it has to offer. And we were incredibly surprised and enjoyed both the gates and the waterfalls. Wondering if you know of any other events similar to that might be coming in the near future.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Summer streets, streets with where they close Park Avenue from someplace in the 60s, 70s, all the way down to the Brooklyn Bridge. And next two sad days, I think it is. Call 311 and you can check the time. Also, the number of people in Herald Square and Times Square. Yeah, I mean, you go through
I drove there through there the other day. It was just crazy what was going on.
Did the traffic move?
No, it did. It did move. I mean, we didn't whisk. We weren't whisked through, but it moved pretty well. But people sitting there in these chairs and at the tables, just watching the world go by.
You know, it'll also bring down, all kidding aside, the accident rate, because the sidewalks just weren't big enough to accommodate the shoppers and the tourists in Times Square and Herald Square, and so they were walking the streets, and we did have a lot.
But at the moment,
accidents.
There are no big deals like the gates or the waterfalls like we've had in past years.
No, I mean, we're working on trying to, you know, come up with some others. There's always new art in City Hall Park and a bunch of things. What you should do is Cultural Affairs has a calendar of all of the different events. So why don't you call 311 and ask them exactly the same question, and I think they can send you a calendar of a whole bunch of things. You know, it's New York City, so there's things going on all over the city in all five boroughs. You have no idea. I mean, from ethnicities and religions that you've never heard of are having events. And there's so many of these things that outside. Governor's Island, for example, a whole bunch of stuff. You should go, Valerie, take the free ferry over to Governor's Island. There are free bikes you can ride around. They've got all sorts of things going on Governor's Island.
That's a good
Island.
Idea.
Yeah, it's just another way to look at the city. It's cold in the winter. In the summer, it is a great breeze.
There's only one reason to be in this neck of the woods. It's the summertime. Valerie, thank you very much. Miriam, good morning. You've got the mayor.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
I'm having a problem. Actually, my daughter is having a problem. She had a construction permit to renovate a house that had been damaged in a fire.
Okay.
And after they started the job and the beginning of the construction was done, somebody started complaining about the job, and they kept getting stop work orders. And it has been in limbo for 4 years already, 4.5 years. Nobody wants to give an answer why it's stuck and why they can't continue. And what
Miriam, I do not know, but if you stay on, we'll get your phone number. And we will have somebody call you, whether or not you're right, the other guy's right, everybody's wrong. I have no idea, but we'll have somebody call you today.
There you go, Miriam. We're taking care of biz. Guy in Brooklyn, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg's ear. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
I think you do a great job.
Thank you.
There's one thing that I would hopefully help me and thousands of other people, if not millions. I have a bunch of ideas as to how to correct certain traffic problems throughout the city. I've been driving in the city for approximately 30 years, and I go from Brooklyn to Westchester every single day to go to work.
What's your question, Guy?
Well, the question is, who can I call to offer some ideas as to how to improve things?
I will, they should go to the Department of Transportation. Jeanette Sedekon is the commissioner. Why don't I stay on the line, and we will get your phone number as well, and I will have somebody from the Department of Transportation give you a call. We're always looking for new ideas.
And I have to, you know, you're willing to take some of those ideas and take the chance and see what happens.
You've got to try new things always, and it's always controversial. John, somebody asked me yesterday, I was talking about an anti-smoking thing of a bunch of students who are working on smoking cessation around the world, the foundation's supporting, and they said, why don't people stand up and fight for this? And I said, because, you know, it's anything new, there's somebody against it. But there aren't enough people who are out there advocating. They love it afterwards, but they don't want to go out on a limb before. And it's up to elected officials to lead from the front, not to sit there and see where the public is and then
To your follow. Point, there was another example of that, and that was the Share a Cab program, which I gather from reading some reactions, people think is a pretty darn good idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of these things are what I always find fascinating. They have been done elsewhere, and they work. Now, it just because it's done elsewhere doesn't mean it will work
right.
Here. I never thought the bicycles that they have in Paris, and actually they're going to start to do that in London. You can walk up, rent a bike. It's conceivable you could make it work
I
here.
I think that was experimented with here, and it didn't work particularly well.
It's very different, the roads and whatever, traffic, and there's requirements for helmets and that sort of thing. So everything that works elsewhere doesn't work here. But if it did work elsewhere, it's certainly worth thinking about. And in fact, California banned smoking, and their bars and restaurants did better long before New York City did. And I kept saying, look, here's a model. It's the bars and restaurants were really the ones that were very worried about it, although I think in the end that what happened was people, it turns out, don't spend money when they smoke. They do spend money when they drink and eat, and that's what bars and restaurants sell, so it's a good deal for them. But we've got to be willing to try new things. And people that said, you know, some people were violently against the Herald Square, Times Square change on Broadway. And, you know, we went and we talked to all the merchants and we looked at all the computer modeling. And I remember doing the announcement saying, somebody said, can you guarantee? And I said, no, you can't guarantee. But the only thing I can guarantee you is, and I probably didn't say this then, but should have, was if you don't try things, you'll never move. I mean, we'd be back in the Stone Ages if we didn't try new things. And the good news about New York City is we keep doing that.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've run out of time, as we always seem to do. Thank you very much. I'll catch up with you next Friday.